some aging technology to new driverless cars. Will you ride the new Skyway? The latest news and your calls just ahead. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, we want your calls on the future of the downtown Skyway, your chance to connect with JTA's Brad Thoburn. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, why opposition is growing to Florida's Sable Trail pipeline. Plus, don't miss the live in-studio performance later on in the hour from local favorites, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. That's coming up, too. All of that ahead. But first this hour, JTA, the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, has been making a lot of big changes lately, like redesigning its bus routes, putting in new bus lines that behave like light rail, and planning a regional transportation center. Also on the agenda, figuring out what to do with the downtown Skyway system. Now, JTA announced a plan last month to update the Skyway's aging technology with self-driving shuttles. And they also want to extend the route from Riverside all the way over to the sports complex. How is this going to work? What can we expect? And how can you, the public, be part of the conversation? Well, Brad Thoburn is in charge of long-range planning and system development for the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, and he's in studio now to bring us up to date and take your calls. Hi, Brad. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having us.
Already getting your calls. What are your thoughts and questions about JTA's plans for the downtown Jacksonville Skyway? Get on the line, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, weigh in on our Facebook page. So last month, as I said, you presented a plan that would really bring big change to the Skyway. Self-driving shuttles and new spokes, new routes. What's changed since then? Where are we with all of this?
Well, we're continuing forward and getting public feedback. We're going to be having a public forum on January 17th at the library downtown from 4:30 to 7. We'll be meeting with our board later that week, getting their feedback and direction on the path forward.
Sure. Now, the Skyway, by the way, is free. If you've never ridden it, it operates every day from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekdays, on weekends only during special events. You're waiting on feedback from the board and the public. You've also got to replace aging technology for these cars to keep the Skyway running while you look toward the future. That's another big part of this, too, isn't it?
It is, and so part of our challenge going forward is figuring out what that transition plan is, what level of maintenance and of the existing vehicles and maybe some mini overhaul of vehicles, or what do we need to do to keep it running effectively while we transition to a new technology.
And for years, people have criticized the Skyway, said that it was a white elephant, a waste of money, not enough people ride it. When you hear these criticisms and then you presented this new plan, have you seen a change in the local attitude about the Skyway?
We do. And I just want to make sure that people understand. I think people don't always see folks riding the Skyway. We actually have 5,000 trips a day. Mm-hmm. There are other streetcar systems that are happy when they get 2,000 trips a day and things like that. So we're getting ridership. I think one of the challenges that we've always faced is that the system was never fully built out. And we've, you know, as the downtown goes, so goes the Skyway. So some of the ups and downs in downtown have been impactful, our parking policy and things like that. But we do see ridership. And I think the biggest thing is people want to see us make better use of that investment that's already been made and make the system more effective. And when you look at where development is planned downtown or where the opportunities are happening, they're just beyond the reach of where the Skyway is today. So it's really imperative for us to make sure we're connected to Brooklyn, to the district, to the sports complex and the development that's happening out in this area.
We're going to go to your calls for JTA's Brad Thoburn on the future of the Skyway in just a moment. The number to join us, 549-2937. So you want new routes going to all the new development in Brooklyn, just west of downtown, the South Bank, where this new project, the district, is going up, to the sports complex, maybe more. What is the price tag for all of this, and what will the new cars look like?
Well, we need to be careful when we talk about cost right now, because we're really at the early phase of the planning process. And we can have conceptuals of different elements, whether it's elevated or at grade, the impacts in terms of the O&M center and things like that are all things that we have to refine as we go forward. What we do know is that the autonomous vehicle technology and the ability to get to the ground level makes the extensions more cost effective. As we develop the specific details and the scope of the project, we will refine and we'll be able to get very more detailed cost estimates. So I'm kind of wary of giving a cost on the overall system because it's going to go phase by phase, and we're going to have individual phases that have utility, add benefit, and that are going to, you know, add value to the system. So we may look at an extension initially to Brooklyn that's much easier, more cost effective, and we can do that quicker versus, you know, the longer extension between, you know, Five Points to the sports complex up into Springfield and down into San Marco. Those will all be considered and evaluated and developed as we go forward.
And how will it be paid for, given the constraints around funds for this kind of public transit?
Well, you know, we've been very effective at competing for funding for these types of projects. The First Coast Flyer BRT is a good example. There's funding programs available for public transit investments like this, capital investment projects. And we did, you know, First Coast Flyer, we competed, we secured funding. And a lot of times that funding between the state and federal government covers about 80 to 90%. Now, on the flip side, one of the things that we think is a great opportunity with this is that we think we're going to be able to reduce our operating costs. And so, and that's a long-term local obligation that adds up over time. And so as you make the system more efficient, that capital investment reaps benefits.
And can you describe, paint a picture, if you could, for our listeners, what these new driverless shuttles or driverless cars, what they'll look like, how they'll work?
Okay, well, there are a handful of different different vehicles out there. They're not just concepts. They're actually vehicles. You can look online and you can see, for example, the Easy Mile Easy 10 or the Ali, the Navia Arma, or the To Get There vehicles. They're all a little bit different. Some are a little bit small and may not fit and work for our system. But in the end, the technology is what's going to drive this. And so the thing that's really exciting is that you have so much flexibility when you have smaller vehicles that can be connected. So they can operate as a train set, and you may have three or four together that can handle peak loads, or you can spread them out and ensure that you have high frequency service so that, you know, when you're going, you know, there are certain times of the day where you don't want to have to wait even 6 minutes for a vehicle. You may just want two or three, and it just changes the nature of that trip so much when you know that there's something coming really quickly. Now, I will tell you that the selection of the vehicle is going to be really critical, and some of them that are out there may need to have some modifications. They may need to be a little faster. They're designed to kind of operate in mixed traffic right now, but we're unique. We are in a separated system that allows some of these vehicles to operate at faster speeds than they may normally be designed for, because they're designed to operate in mixed traffic, or they're anticipated to work in mixed traffic.
I'm looking at the website easymile.com. They're also called robot shuttles. It looks like a small bus, but that goes along on the street, no driver. Will the Skyway keep any of the elevated lines, or will everything be down on the ground now?
We think we want to keep the elevated structure because it's a major investment and it has great benefits because it really makes the system work more efficiently and reliably. It's helpful to be out of that mixed traffic. Now, even at the ground level, we're going to be looking at opportunities to secure a lane, for example, for dedicated transit lane for those vehicles so that they will be more reliable and they can move faster. Those are the kind of things that will work out through the development process. But the elevated structure is something we want to utilize, and we definitely need to utilize going forward.
So you'll keep that, but so it'll be a combination of that and these ground shuttles.
Our vision is to have the elevated system be able to get down to the ground level. So you're not going to have to transfer. In most places, we can make that happen. There are some places where we're going to have to do some engineering and figure out the strategy to actually get from the elevated structure down to the ground level. But in places like Brooklyn, you can do it very easily there. You can get down into San Marco along the train line, the FC rail line area. You can get, there's ways to get to the ground level. It's a little harder on Bay Street, but we're going to figure out a way to make that happen.
Lots of calls as we talk with the JTA's Brad Thoburn about the new vision and plans for the Jacksonville Skyway. What would you like to see? 549-2937. Mylan is in Ponte Vedra. Hi, Mylan. Good morning.
So it's harder on Bay Street, but we're going to figure out a way to do that.
Okay. Turn your radio down and give us a call back. It's 549-2937. Mark is on the west side. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. First off, I'm glad you guys are having public input on this topic, because I don't trust you as far as I could throw you. You said that you failed to mention a couple of things, that the Skyway was originally, by the JTA estimate, supposed to have 10,000 riders a day. You were happy with the 5,000 you got, and also you're subsidized by the city for several million dollars extra over your operating budget every year. And this system you're talking about now, it sounds like it's going to be even more. I mean, is this system working in a city right now at somewhere in the country that we can look at?
Good question. Is there any other city doing this?
This really is going to be on the cutting edge in terms of the technology, but there are urban, I mean, it's common for a transit system to have an urban circulator. The downtown circulator is sort of an element of your overall transportation, public transit system. And, you know, Mark's right. The original projections were higher than were achieved.
Can you understand why there's the – I mean, this is going back before your tenure at JTA.
I get that. And I think I mentioned some of the reasons that's the case is that it was never fully built out, and the conditions around downtown changed. I mean, when the Skyway was being planned, there were 5 department stores downtown. There was congestion. There were issues with parking. So the system was built, and things changed downtown dramatically between the time it was planned and when it was implemented. And as I mentioned, sort of how downtown goes is how the Skyway goes, and they're tied together. And we think it's really critical to have a strong downtown for our public transportation system. The circulator system is a piece of it. And again, you know, public transportation doesn't pay for itself. The roads don't pay for themselves. They're part of our public infrastructure that moves people and creates a strong economy and a high quality life. So, you know, I hear the concern about subsidizing public transportation, but the reality is it's an important investment in our community.
All right, let's go back now to Ponte Vedra. Mylan, good morning.
Good morning. My question is, would it have been more cost-effective for a minibus system? Now, you know, they used to have this in London where I came from. Instead of, you know, the regular buses, the minibuses are cost-effective. They could be put on more routes, and, you know, the frequency can be better. And each bus stand, you know, you have a real-time timetable of where the buses are at, and, you know, when the buses, would be arriving. But basically, you know, the minibus system that they have in London, you know, gives a greater frequency of service, a wider ridership, you know, throughout the town. And I think it's just more cost-effective. I'll take that offline. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mylan. You know, it's interesting. I mean, it's part of the concept that we're building on with this program is that, you know, we have vehicles today on the Skyway that can fit. We can get 60 passengers. But they're 2-car trains, and they lack flexibility. And by having them spread out, yeah, you can have more frequency, smaller vehicles. But then the nice thing is that they can connect virtually, essentially. They don't have to be physically connected, and they can operate as a train set. You know, and when we design a transit system, we do look at areas where we can have a smaller vehicle, or if we're on the main line, we have a bigger vehicle. And I think going forward, you will see, you know, the things that Mylan's talking about are going to be discussed and contemplated as we plan forward, especially with autonomous vehicle technology. You may start thinking about smaller shuttles, kind of having fulfilling that last mile connectivity and that kind of thing. Or, you know, if it makes sense, and you know if you can have that greater frequency with a smaller vehicle, that may make sense as well. So we have to look at that as an opportunity.
As you said, you're wanting input from the board, from the public. We're getting some right now, and at an upcoming public hearing at the Jacksonville Public Library. That's coming up next week. 17th, you said?
17th.
It starts at 4:30 on the 17th. You can go to that as well. Let's go to Tom on the west side. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Having recently had a vehicle destroyed while I was sitting still, I'm entirely in favor of anything that improves the the public transportation system in Jacksonville because I've come to the conclusion it's just too dangerous to drive. I also really don't have a choice at this point.
Too dangerous to drive.
Well, you know, and that's I hate to hear that happening. You know, one of the promises of autonomous vehicle and connected vehicle technology is even before you get to full autonomy, this technology is going to really help improve safety on our roads and efficiency of our infrastructure as well. As vehicles start to be able to talk to each other, and we've seen a lot of the driver assistance systems are going to start making a difference. I mean, 35,000 people are killed on our roads every year. That is a huge number, and it's something that we have the ability through technology to reduce.
And we're getting a lot of feedback on Facebook, Twitter, emails from all of you about the downtown Skyway on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Dean writes, "The Skyway is the key to downtown's growth. It needs to go to the arena and stadium and into Riverside. I see more people riding it." Nanette writes, "If they're not talking about bringing it out to the suburbs, it's just another waste of time." Here's a tweet. "I'm glad to see plans to modernize and expand the Skyway. Why can't Amtrak go to this new transit hub? The tracks are right there." And here's an email from Scott on the South Side. "When will the Skyway go to Everbank Field?" Lots of questions for you, Brad Thoburn.
Well, you know, the Amtrak was a good question. You know, we're actually working on a project right now that makes the freight rail improvements that would enable Amtrak to come downtown and connect with the Regional Transportation Center and the Skyway. So that's something we're working on.
Here's another tweet for you. "How environmentally friendly will the new JTA enhanced system be?"
Well, you know, these vehicles are envisioned to be electric. And so one of the challenges we're going to have is, you know, the current Skyway is electric power too, but it's wired, and it's hardwired, and we have to decide, are we going to have a battery power system, and how are you going to charge the batteries and deal with that sort of thing. And then on the flip side, on our buses, we're converting to CNG buses, and we're even going to look to electric buses in the future.
If you're just tuning in, lots of news from JTA this morning about the downtown Skyway. New plans just out. What do you think? Mike is downtown, and he's been holding. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all doing today?
Doing all right, thanks.
Hey, I'm a big booster for public transportation. I travel a lot, and you know, I go to other cities: Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Chicago. New York and Chicago's public transportation is awesome, and so I'd love to see Jacksonville's get, you know, keep getting better. It saved my bacon when I was a poor, starving, driverless, carless college student. So I definitely relied on the buses there. And when I take my kids downtown, I've taken them on the Skyway, and they love it. And I'm a big fan of that too. One criticism, though: the Rosa Parks station, the roofs on that are deplorable. They're horrible looking, and they've been looking terrible for a long time. And, you know, here we've got this transfer station that's named after a great American. Is there anything going on that could tidy that up? Those roofs are, I don't know who designed them, but they didn't think long term. Is there any chance of smartening that up? And I'll take the answer off the air.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, there's two things. We are doing that, but I think also we're going to repair those roofs, and they are unsightly and an issue that we've had challenges with that material, and we are going to address that. But at the same time, I would point out that the transfer hub is going to move essentially from Rosa Parks to the Regional Transportation Center. We're going to start construction of the intercity bus terminal later this month.
And that's going to be
By the convention center.
Libello. And we're getting more tweets about that. "Nobody's talking about Amtrak," tweets Matt. "The rail infrastructure is perfect for a Portland-esque light rail system."
The rail infrastructure that you're looking at would be a commuter rail system, and which is sort of, you know, they're different between streetcar, light rail, and you really have to design a system that fits where your population is and where, you know, that's going to generate ridership. Each one of these sort of serves a different purpose. BRT light rail sort of in one area, commuter rail is more regional, and then the Skyway and streetcar more of an urban circulator type system. We have looked at commuter rail. I think that's in the future. It's just a question of when does it really, you know, generate the kind of ridership you need to justify it. But I think in the long-term vision, that's something that we'll definitely want to keep looking at.
Let's take one more call. It's Jason in San Marco. Hey, Jason. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. This is a great conversation. We need to have it more often.
Thanks.
I've had an idea for a long time that I'm going to share with you. I really think the Skyway, obviously, it's not really working. And I drive everywhere I go in Jacksonville. I don't use any public transportation. And I almost never see one of these huge buses full of people. They're full of 6, 7, 8 people. My proposal would be this: develop a transportation system that it has between 200 and 300 20-passenger vans that are hybrid gas electric vehicles. They could be developed here in Jacksonville. They could be highly customizable, very efficient. They could be applied where they were needed, and when they're not needed, they could be sitting somewhere not burning any fuel. I think that the efficiency of that model would be one of a kind. These would be highly, you know, beautiful, bright yellow or green buses. People would see them. They would begin to identify them. It would be something hallmark to our city. And I really believe this is a choice that needs to be looked at because of the efficiency of the system, the ability to work when it's needed and to be sitting idle when it's not needed. The way it could be worked on the Sunday game day.
Okay.
It could serve the population centers for games. Anyway, that's my proposal. I think it'd be a lot cheaper in the long run and something we could then sell or develop for other cities. I think it would be incredibly popular.
All right. What about that idea?
Well, again, I think that's not too different from what the earlier caller mentioned about the smaller vehicles. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, when you look at, you know, where our costs are in running the system, and you compare sometimes like a 30-foot versus a 40-foot bus, not that big a difference to justify and the savings. And so you need to have buses that, you know, can run in the long in that long haul and like on the BRT routes, your frequent routes that have higher capacity. You do want to have a fleet of smaller vehicles like your community shuttles or local buses, but you got to make that fit. Again, I think as you look at as the technology develops, it'll force us to think more of, like Jason's mentioning, you know, can you have smaller vehicles, especially if they're electric, if they're driverless vehicles, can they be more on demand? But you also have to have a system that's reliable, people know where it is, and that, you know, so you have to have that balance between what's a fixed route and what's a flex route. And so it's a little more complicated than just going to a smaller bus, but I think that's the kind of thing we need to be thinking about. Some places we're going to need bigger buses. We may need articulated buses on routes that and quarters that have heavy traffic versus the smaller. You know, we have to keep looking at what that right balance is.
But for people that didn't get a chance to chat with you, you want to invite the public to come out to this meeting next week.
Correct.
And
absolutely,
that is going to be at the Jacksonville Public Library starting at 4:30, a public hearing on the future of the Skyway.
Absolutely. We'd love to have a lot of folks there and get their feedback.
He's Brad Thoburn with the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, and thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Much more still ahead later. Don't miss the live in-studio performance from bluegrass trio Grandpa's Cough Medicine, a couple of shows this weekend. But up next, why opposition is growing to Florida's Sable Trail pipeline. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, treating children like adults when they fight in school. Some states prosecute schoolyard fights as felonies regardless of the kid's age. Children who get arrested are far more likely to drop out. What's behind these tougher penalties? And how do we save troubled kids from spiraling out of control? Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're heading to Panama with pianist Danilo Perez.
There is a history here of jazz that is being forgotten. Panama was jazz. Panama was a connection with New Orleans from the early times. It's a hidden treasure.
Music and stories from the 2016 Panama Jazz Festival. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, the shale boom and low prices for natural gas have encouraged a pipeline bonanza in the U.S. 14 new pipelines carrying both oil and natural gas are either on the drawing board or nearing completion. One of these is Florida's Sable Trail Pipeline. It's set to run more than 500 miles through Alabama, Florida, and Georgia. Now, the pipeline is built as a way to bring energy diversity and clean natural gas to the state. Critics, though, say Sable Trail will cross major watersheds, environmentally sensitive areas, and residential neighborhoods. Growing opposition to the pipeline is also centered around Floridians' desire for more affordable and available solar and renewable energy and concerns about fracked gas. Activists point to the recent defeat of Amendment 1. That was seen as anti-solar by opponents who voted it down. Josh Weber is a local activist who's part of the growing protest movement against the Sable Trail Pipeline, and he joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are your questions for the Sable Trail Pipeline? Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, as I mentioned, this pipeline is being touted as a way to bring more energy independence and diversity to Florida. There's a camp protest site, though, that sprung up against it over in Live Oak, sort of similar to what we saw against the Dakota Access Pipeline out west. Why are activists coalescing around Sable Trail?
Because of some of the risks that you had just mentioned, and there's even economic problems that we can start to see with this, or not even start to see. You can look at it from the beginning that this is just bad news for Florida all the way around. The name of the camp, by the way, is Sacred Water Camp. If anybody wants to get connected to that on Facebook, we have a Facebook page and a hashtag.
Are you employing the similar tactics that we saw with the self-styled water protectors coming out against the Dakota Pipeline employed, you know, continuously inhabited camp and other tactics like that to stop the construction of the pipeline?
We are trying to use as much, learn as much as we can from the stand up there in North Dakota. There's some logistical differences with our camp down here. First being that we're not actually in front of the pipeline, but we do maintain a constant action basis, going out and raising awareness in the communities, as well as trying to demonstrate at the job sites and in towns and stuff like that.
Now, in November, a motion for a stay that would halt construction of this pipeline was denied. So as of right now, the pipeline's scheduled to go forward. You and other activists, though, the big concern is, well, there are twofold concerns, the environmental impact and also how this, it's my understanding, contributes to continued dependence on fossil fuels. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd agree. The industry itself admits that the fracked gas is only a finite industry anyway, so it's on its way out the door. And, I mean, it's really frustrating because they've admitted that this gas isn't even going to be used for domestic use anyway. The gas going through this pipeline is going to be shipped overseas, refined, and bought back. So it's not even a step forward for our own energy dependence, regardless of if it's on fuel, fossil fuels, or alternative energy sources. This is just kind of a money pit almost for a couple people to get rich off of. And the amount of money that's being spent on this could easily be used for research and development into alternative fuel sources.
So you don't agree with the argument that, the pipeline construction folks are saying is that this is just a way to bring another portfolio of energy to the state of Florida?
I think that's a lie.
Why?
Because this pipeline, as far as jobs goes, only creating a minute amount. I think according to the website, it was 288 permanent jobs along the entire 515-mile pipeline. And as I just stated, this gas isn't going to be used here in the United States. It's not going to be used here domestically. Well, at least not in the state that it's going to be shipped through that pipeline. They're going to buy it back at top dollar, and then we're probably going to get it after China or whoever refines it, and we buy it back.
Now, the U.S. EPA initially expressed concern that the pipeline would threaten the Florida aquifer in both Georgia and Florida, but then they backed off on that. The EPA is no longer actively opposing. Environmental groups, though, have filed a lawsuit to stop construction. Is that the latest beyond the protest site and the protest movements that you're part of?
That also today, we are doing I guess what you would call a phone bomb, where if anybody interested would call Governor Rick Scott, the Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA, any environmental organization you can think of from 8 to 5. We are trying to get them to try to pay attention to this.
Let's go to Maureen in Jacksonville. She's on the line now. Hey, Maureen, thanks for calling. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, we need to call our representatives and whoever is going to approve this to stop it, because it just plain out poisons the water, the soil, the air as it goes through. It's not worth it for the corporations to make that money. And also that solar number one, that was the corporate solar too, just to make money. So we need to stand up to these corporations with this propaganda and stop. It's more important for our soil, air, water, and people to be healthy rather than their profits.
Thanks for the call. Now, the defeat of Amendment 1 seems to have put wind in your sails. That was the amendment that looked to be solar, promoting solar. Critics said it was actually a deceptive amendment that would have limited the growth of solar in Florida. It went down to defeat.
Yeah, I actually helped petition some of the solar initiatives. I didn't see the other initiative that I helped petition for on the ballot, but as far as my understanding went, that was supposed to be putting the power of solar energy into the already standing like company infrastructure, the power company infrastructure. So I think so.
So where does your movement go from here? Today you said you'll have a day of action, right? And then what comes next?
On the 14th, we also have a massive day of civil disobedience that we are trying to promote and get as many Floridians involved in as possible. There's other actions being planned as well on our Facebook. We try to keep as updated on that as possible. We have a few people that are at camp all the time that understand that social media is one of the ways that everybody finds out about these kind of events most of the time.
And he's activist Josh Weber, part of the movement against the planned Sable Trail pipeline that would extend through Florida and Georgia. Thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
In a moment, The Spectator and a live performance from Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Keep listening.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Damien Chazelle, the writer and director of the new movie musical La La Land. It stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, has been nominated for 7 Golden Globes, and was named Best Film of the Year by the New York Film Critics Circle. Chazelle also made the film Whiplash, about a music student and his overly demanding teacher. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT for an evening with Dr. Richard Freund. Dr. Freund was part of an archaeological team that discovered a 100-foot-long underground tunnel made by Lithuanian Jews during the Holocaust. Meet Dr. Freund and see a preview of the Nova episode that filmed the international team during their historic find. February 9th at 6 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Tickets are free, but seating is limited, so be sure to reserve your seat today. Go to wjct.org/events.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming, anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Well, it's the first weekend of the new year. If you haven't made your plans yet, we have a few ideas for you. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, on the line this morning, thespectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay.
Hey, good morning.
Yay.
How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Did you have a good Christmas?
All around town, because I can't take you anywhere because my car doesn't start.
Yes. What is the issue with your car this week, my friend?
Well, this time it's either the starter or something with connections with battery.
Uh-huh. Maybe I think it's time for a new car. What do you think?
I need a new limousine. I need a limousine service is what I need.
I'll look into that. Isn't it your birthday this week? Maybe we could get you that as a birthday present.
Tomorrow, as a matter of fact, Melissa Ross.
Yeah, you're going to be 25 again, which is so exciting.
Oh, my gosh. I know. I feel so old.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly how you feel. Now, let's talk about this weekend. In a moment, Grandpa's Cough Medicine is going to perform live in studio. Unfortunately, you're going to miss that.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm not there.
But what's happening? What's going on this weekend?
The symphony, one of my favorite events. They have it a couple times a year. It's called Symphony in 60, and they have like an open bar before, and then they have it's a 60-minute show as opposed to the full concert. And Courtney Lewis. Well, he does it like an explanation of what the, you know, concert is about and things to listen for. And then afterwards, you go on stage and you have more drinks and meet the musicians.
Yeah,
brilliant.
That is such a fun night at the symphony. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's Mozart. And then they're also doing the same show, the full version, Friday and Saturday. And we have 2 belters to give away for the symphony. They can use them for tonight's show or for any Masterworks, Pops, or Coffee series show. This season.
You've got tickets for tonight.
Or they don't have to use them tonight. They can use them for any, have them email you. They can be for tonight. They can be for another show.
All right. A ticket giveaway for the symphony, courtesy of the Spectator. Email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We will pick one winner at random. Okay, so that's tonight, the Symphony in 60. Tomorrow, it's beer and hymns at Bold City Brewery.
Yeah.
And they do go together, I guess, kind of.
Apparently, I've never heard of it before until just, you know, I saw it on Facebook, but it's a community sing-along, and it's not spiritually inclined or anything. They just drink beer and sing hymns.
All right, why not? Check it out tomorrow night at Bold City. Also tomorrow night, this is cool. The first Friday of the month at the Mosh, it's a cosmic concert in the Brian Gooding Planetarium. This is literally a mind-blowing event. I've never been. I've heard it's really cool, though.
Melissa Ross, shame on you. I haven't been in about 20 years, so I haven't been in stock, but... They have 4 shows. U2 is at 7, then Retro at 8, Led Zeppelin at 9, and 10 is The Wall.
Okay. A couple more events, a couple more news and notes. Friday at the Times Union Center, it's the State Ballet Theater of Russia. We are not getting this information from WikiLeaks. We are getting this from you, Carrie Speckman. It's Swan Lake at the Times Union Center tomorrow night. And then Saturday, big news, season 12 auditions at the Prime Osborne Convention Center for America's Got Talent.
I might have to go just to watch the nonsense that it brings out.
And you didn't put on the list that there's a big birthday party for you Friday night to celebrate your 25th again birthday.
No, I didn't.
But happy birthday a little early. TheSpectator.com.
Thank you.
I'll see you tomorrow at the festivities. Happy birthday.
Yes, you will. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks so much. All right, now what you've all been waiting for. Local favorites, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. In town for a couple of shows this weekend. Saturday night in Jacksonville Beach at Mojo Kitchen. Sunday in St. Augustine at Planet Sarbez. We are very lucky to have the boys in studio to tell us all about the shows and their new album, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Guys, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for being with us. Now, Brett Bass, you're our spokesperson today for the band. You guys recently relocated to Asheville, North Carolina, correct?
We did.
What's it like up there in the mountains?
Well, first of all, it's just beautiful. We got to be there during fall and see the leaves change, and that was mind-blowing to me, being from Florida. I'd never experienced that, so I really enjoyed it. But there's tons of bluegrass music up there, tons of weekly jams that we get to participate in, and it's just a great community to be a part of as a bluegrass musician.
You're touring right now, supporting your album 180 Proof.
Yes, ma'am.
Which is sort of self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Tell us about the new music.
Well, we actually released that last year after we won One Spark. That was the album we made with that. And we're working on new tunes in the studio right now. But that's still our most current record, so most of the people who are familiar with us have probably already learned most of that stuff. So today we'll be playing some new material that's not on that record.
Excellent. What are you going to play for us?
This is a tune called Looking Glass Falls that I got inspired to write while at said waterfall in North Carolina.
Here they are, Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Thank you. That's Grandpa's Cough Medicine. Unbelievable. Now, you can go see them tomorrow night in Gainesville at First Magnitude Brewing, Saturday night in Jacksonville Beach at Mojo Kitchen, and Sunday in St. Augustine at Planet Sarbez. A full touring schedule at their website, outlawbluegrass.com. Guys, you sound amazing. Can you can you do another
song?
Thank
you so much. Absolutely. We'll do you a tune that has some vocals in it here. It's called How Often Do I Think About My Darling?
Cough Medicine. Go to outlawbluegrass.com for tour dates and information. Shows all across the listening area this weekend. They are down from Asheville, North Carolina for a swing through Florida. Grandpa's Cough Medicine, you guys are amazing.
Thank you so much
for being on the show. That is our show. Thanks so much to all of our guests and callers today. The show's producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Catch our podcast every day at iTunes or through the WJCT app, and 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.